Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Conversations Live, where we connect you live with the artists and authors you love who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, and before we begin, let me first welcome our listeners in Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, Texas, California, and today also in Washington State. Hello to all of you listening to us live online as well as by podcast, and thank you for joining us again. We have a terrific show for you this hour. We're going to be speaking with best-selling author Gretchen Craig. She's a writer of historical romance. She's going to be discussing her two books, Always and Forever, as well as Ever My Love. During the second half hour, we'll be talking with Dana Pittman of Neo Promotions about the work that she's doing to encourage authors. But to get us started, we are very fortunate to be joined from Texas with best-selling author Gretchen Craig. How are you doing, Gretchen?
Hello. Glad to be with you.
Look, we're very glad to have you here with Conversations Live. I know because of me, it has been very difficult. We've been trying to do this interview now for almost a year, it seems like.
I think it has been that long.
And so I think when I first met you was in Mississippi during your book signing you had at Walden Books in Jackson.
Right.
And I think we've been trying to get it done since that time. So thank you so much for taking out this time with us today.
Sure.
Well, look, we're going to go ahead and get started with you, Gretchen. I want for our listeners who might not be familiar with you and your work, why don't we start off with giving them a little background. Who is Gretchen Craig? What should they know about you?
Oh, all right. Well, I've been writing 6 years. I waited till I had finished teaching high school to start. And my topics are they're historical novels, but what I'm interested in these books has been an examination of how ordinary people can do really, really horrible things and still feel pretty good about themselves. And I, years ago, had read a book called The Doctors about the doctors in Nazi Germany who did the experimentation, and was interested in how those people and those camp guards who did dreadful things during the day could go home at night and be good fathers and good husbands and good sons. And how is it we, you know, the human personality can have these contradictions. And of course, there's no easy answer to that. What I got out of the book, The Doctors, seemed to be just that it was compartmentalization. But all of that was in my mind when we were visiting in Louisiana and seeing the old plantation homes, and some of them have old slave quarters out back. And that brought all of that to mind again, how these slave owners thought they were good people, went to church and were good fathers and thought they were good slave owners, and it's just, from our perspective, unbelievable. So those
right.
were, that's what was in my mind when I started the books.
Well, you know, one of the things that surprised me that right out of the gate with your very first book, which I mentioned was Always and Forever,
right.
you were able to get a national following. For one thing, I think that contributed to that was your being published by Kensington Books, which is one of the premier publishers out there under the Zebra imprint.
Yeah.
Walk us through, what the process was for you in getting published, because well, I know writing the story is one thing, but did you have any idea that there would be the type of interest in the stories that you told as have happened since the books came out?
Well, I was too ignorant to be surprised. didn't know anything about the publishing business. So when it all happened, I was not, I was pleased and proud, but no, I didn't understand how against the odds it was. But I had, this was my first manuscript that I felt was publishable, and I went to a conference where an editor from Kensington Press was doing a little workshop presentation and had each of us, there were about 9 of us, go around the circle and read the first few pages of our manuscript. And when it was my turn, there was no response. She didn't say anything and nobody else did. And I thought, oh, my God, I've humiliated myself. So, but what she finally did was lift up her head and said, I want that on my desk Monday morning. So I floated through the rest of the conference. I was thrilled. So that's how she chose that one. I never actually shopped that book around to anybody else.
Wow, just that easy.
Yeah, I was lucky. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that we hear stories. I mean, we talk to hundreds of authors literally every year, and the stories are never the same. And so to hear that story, I mean, that's just one more facet of how, I mean, in this industry, you just never know. And that's why I guess they say it's always good to be prepared, because you never know where that big break will come from. With the book Always and Forever, though, I will have to say, when I first met you last year, historical romance is something I never really was interested in. You know, there have been other authors that I've heard of. Think one author that a lot of people talked a little bit about when I was growing up was Barbara Cartland, and I thought about what she wrote, and I never really had an interest. When you were writing your book, did you have a particular age group in mind? Because normally people of my generation, and I'm 33, we don't really appreciate what has happened in the 1800s, especially, to help us to get to where we are today, and the backstories of a lot of the people who were living during the 1800s. Did you have a certain age group in mind when you were writing your books?
No, I just was thinking, you know, other adults. No specific age group in mind, but you mentioned Barbara Cartland, and her books and mine are you know, very different. And mine is not, they have a new category which fits me better, and I'm grateful for that. Mine is not a straight romance in which the main thrust of the book is about the relationship between a man and a woman and how they go through obstacles but end up together. That's the traditional romance. Mine is more historical with romantic elements, so that there is a love relationship, but it's not the heart of the story. So it's really a subgenre. And you won't find, you know, Barbara Cartland in a genre like mine.
Okay.
What I was more interested in was the relationship between these two half-sisters. One's the slave and one is the mistress. And how that dynamic affects that whole generation. And, of course, the generation before them and after them. So these two sisters, rather than the romantic relationship, is the core of the book. I have some favorite romance authors, but I'm really more not straight romance.
Okay. And you mentioned even in the beginning, Gretchen, that, I mean, you really write analyzing humans and how they react in situations and how they're viewed by the things that they do. Maybe, you know, you even mentioned about the churchgoers. They can go to church, but they might have this other dimension to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, when Always and Forever came out and the response was so positive, what were those around you saying? Because I'm just curious. I mean, did they say, oh, you know, Gretchen finally published that book, or were they saying, Gretchen, what was the reaction of those around you and your family and friends that knew you?
I think they were all surprised. I've just led an ordinary life as a mother and wife and school teacher, and hadn't published anything until that book was published. So they were all interested, that, and they liked it, and they were surprised that it was as good as it was, which is not a great compliment, is it? the response from readers has been very good and positive, and makes me feel good, because they mostly have been touched by those characters and slavery in a deeper way than, I mean, everybody knows slavery was horrible, but to come to a deeper understanding of it and an awareness of what it can do to the slave owner as well as the slave himself. So.
Now, I want to fast forward just a little bit from Always and Forever to Ever My Love.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the second book, I'm just curious, because we hear, even in the entertainment business, we hear about the sophomore jinx.
Uh-huh.
And it seems as though the books were published right about a year after each other. Is that correct?
Right.
Because, yeah, 2006 about For Always and Forever, and 2007 For Ever My Love.
Uh-huh.
Were you concerned, because there was such a buildup with readers and even with fellow authors that were praising you with your debut novel, were you concerned about the second book living up to those same expectations?
Well, I was, and I felt a great deal of pressure, too, from the editor. She wanted it fast, and I offered her the book I had been working on, which was another historical set in Miami before it was Miami, when it was just a fishing village with 20 houses, and she wasn't. She liked the book, but she says it's not what we print. And I had a 2-book contract with them, so what she wanted was a second, Louisiana novel. So I felt very pressured to push that out, and I didn't feel it has the same scope as the first book. But some of my writers and my daughter prefer the second book to the first one, so I'm not a judge of which one's better. But it is has more romance in it because I felt pressured to do that. And now I've backed off. I'm not pressured now, and I want less romance and more just human nature in the next ones. But I know what you mean about the sophomore slump, because I'm not in under contract for the next book, so I have yet to see how quickly I can get that one published.
Okay, I want to continue with that for a moment about the storyline, because, I mean, of course, the books deal with the South, and you mentioned the Louisiana theme, and Natchez, I think, Mississippi, finds its way in the second book as well.
Yeah.
When you're doing book signings and you're traveling, especially because you're in Texas, and when you're traveling, I met you in Mississippi, when you're traveling to those areas, do you feel as though the characters come alive for you when you're visiting those areas?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Place is really important to me, and it just lights my imagination to be in a new place. And I've been to Louisiana several times. But to see that one particular trip when we were exploring the plantation houses really inspired me, because those that have been restored are so opulent, with extraordinarily expensive fabric puddling at the bottoms of the windows, and just excess. And you go back out to the slave quarters, the ones that still have them, and they've been sanitized. You know, they're empty and bare and whitewashed, but they're so bare and so small, and the contrast is boggling. And so being in the place really does inspire me and sets my imagination moving.
So what is it, do you think, Gretchen, it was about Louisiana that started it for you? Because you do live in Texas, and Texas, of course, is rich in its own history. What was it that drew you to begin with Louisiana?
One of the stories I heard when we were in Louisiana was about a Creole plantation run by the matriarch, which was not uncommon in the 19th century, early 19th century, and the fact that she had a son who chose his mistress, his black mistress, over his wife in day-to-day spats. And to think about what kind of family dynamic that would set up, and how painful it must have been for the white wife, and how difficult for the black woman. And then there would be children living in close proximity who were half siblings, and yet their expectations were totally different. That story really got me thinking, and that's when I imagined Josie and Cleo, the two half sisters, in that situation. And also, I grew up in Florida. I'm not a real Texan. And
okay. The
sultriness of that terrain, the lushness of it, is something I understand very well, with the mosquitoes and the alligators. And I also am old enough that I remember segregation very clearly, which was, of course, not entirely comparable to slavery. But I remember the expectations of passing a black man on the street as a young white woman, that I was not to meet his eyes and he was not to meet mine. I remember all that. So that, even though it was a century before my time or more than that, I felt close to it. I could imagine being there.
And it's amazing, because in reading, because when I was getting ready for this interview, I went back and reread my notes I made for Always and Forever. And I mean, it is written in such a way that it puts you there, and it puts you in that situation. And for me, not knowing a lot about that time period other than, of course, what I read, I mean, to actually put names and faces, even though they're fictional, to put them in that time period, it does make it a little bit easier to understand.
Yes,
versus versus than just hearing general history about what may have happened.
Oh, I agree. That's the magic of fiction.
Right. And so I'm just curious because you have gotten so much feedback, and I'm sure that, I mean, because your work has definitely transcended not only generations as far as age, but also racial lines as well. Can you tell us maybe some of the feedback that you've gotten from readers about the impact your story had on them, about the way you portrayed your characters, the impact it had on them and their dealings with people?
Well, it's a very select group who actually will write to an author, so I don't know about it being representative comments, but some of them were very angry that Cleo, is the slave sister, they wanted her to have had a romance that ended happily with her slave partner, and it doesn't end happily. So they were angry that she didn't get the best ending. And also some of them were angry because Cleo, the slave sister, ends up with the man whom the white sister wanted, and they were angry about that. So some of them, a lot of the feedback I get is very personal, and a lot of them were responding to the personal relationships in the book, and not so much to the aspect of slavery, although I did have people talk to me in person about, was that real? Did they really have a cage on this man's head? And I assured them, yes, I did find such a thing in the research. So they were horrified by the horrifying moments. But in those emails and in those personal conversations, we don't get in depth. So I don't have a cross-section of what people respond to clearly.
You know, when you mentioned that about the cage, I thought about Birch and Ever My Love, and his interrogation techniques in that book. So, I mean, it definitely does put you there, and it's so thrilling for me as a reader to have that experience, because a lot of books are just words that you really don't get. At the end of the day, you've read the book, and you really can't remember anything. But in this, you actually feel like you can taste the air, you can feel what they're feeling, you're experiencing what they're experiencing, and you find yourself rooting for certain individuals.
Well,
and I think I think that's just one of the sides of good writing. For those that are just joining us, you're listening to Conversations Live. Our guest for the first half hour is best-selling author Gretchen Craig. She's the author of two books, Always and Forever, and also Ever My Love. Gretchen, we're going to have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back from this break, I want you to tell our listeners what you've been up to since the release of the second book and what they can expect from you in the near future, okay?
Okay.
All right, to take us on the break, we're going to listen to one of my good friends, the Patrick Smith Band. This is their song, Every Now and Then. We'll be right back with Conversations Live.
Wonder why you're leaving me here so often. say, take my hand. Please believe there's every now and then I cry. Now wonder why you're leaving me here so alone. And every now and then I pray that I won't say that I can't believe it when you're gone.
There you have the Patrick Smith Band with Every Now and Then. You're listening to Conversations Live, where we connect you live with the artists and authors you love who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. We've been speaking with, for the first half hour, with best-selling author Gretchen Craig. She's the author of two books, Always and Forever and Ever My Love. Gretchen, before we took that commercial break, I said that we wanted to talk about what's coming up next for you, because Ever My Love was released last year. Again, it was met with critical acclaim, as was your debut novel. So what can your readers look to get from you in the future? What's in store for you?
Well, I'm working on the third book in the trilogy of the Louisiana books. It's the next generation of the same families that are in the first two books, and now it's on the eve of the Civil War. No, wait a minute, I'm confusing myself. The last book is on the eve of the Civil War. This one I'm working on now, the Civil War has begun, and it is the same families in New Orleans. And what I'm interested in exploring is how people reconcile their consciences with what may be a different system of honor. Honor might require, for instance, one character to go to war as a Confederate soldier, but his conscience tells him that he'd rather be a pacifist, or another character might rather fight for the Union, but his family would be disgraced. So how do they reconcile these inner conflicts? And again, I've got the racial issues, because one of the great heroes I've only learned about recently was Andre Kalo, I think it's Kalo, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And he was a free black man in New Orleans and a leader of the black regiment with the Union Army, and he was a wonderful inspiration to his troops and died on the battlefield heroically. I want to include him as well because I'm so impressed with him. And then the mixed blood is also a factor. New Orleans racial composition is so complicated with many generations of mixed white and black blood, and so Cleo's daughter is a major character in this third book, where we are into the Civil War and dealing with the emotional costs of making these decisions. After that one, I'm interested in perhaps going back and doing a prequel, so go back another century into the 1700s in Louisiana and see what happens when the Acadians arrive from Nova Scotia. They are the people who become the Cajuns, and they had an enormous undertaking to adjust to this terribly different climate and terrain and poverty, and yet they did it very successfully. So that's where I'm headed with the Louisiana series, and I'm probably through with Louisiana.
Yeah, you don't want to make the other states too jealous.
Well, I would like to try a contemporary. I'm polishing a contemporary right now, a crime novel about psychopaths. So I've done a lot of research on psychopaths, and I've got these two evil women, and that's probably the one that will be published next, and it won't. It's not a historical.
Okay.
But I'm excited to try something different, too.
You know, and that's interesting, because I'm sure, I mean, as with the other books, you will probably pick up a totally different reading base for that.
I think so, yeah. I may even have to use a different name. I don't know.
Oh, now that would be interesting.
Yeah, they may want me to.
Okay.
So that somebody expecting a a historical doesn't pick mine up and find out, oh, what? What's happened?
Exactly. Well, look, Gretchen, let me ask you this, because I'm sure at this point, because, I mean, with two books under your belt being published by a major publisher, I'm sure you get questions all the time from those aspiring to write, because we find all the time that there are people who have that aspiration to write, and they don't really know what to do. They don't know what that next step is. What advice would you give to an aspiring author? If someone said, Gretchen, you know, I'm working on this manuscript, or I have this idea, I'm just not sure what to do with it, what would you tell them?
Yes, I'd say, well, yes, first of all, I would acknowledge that many of us want to have published a book. The writing of it is something else. It's very difficult, and I would, first of all, let them know that everybody acknowledges that, and nobody who is into writing thinks it's easy, and that they have to be willing to devote a significant amount of time and a regular basis, on a regular basis, every day, and they have to sit down and do it. The other thing I would say is that they have to look at it as a craft that they can improve on. It's not going to come out right the first time. And writers who are professionals are always studying and learning. There are many, many books on the market to help you learn your craft. And they have to understand that they must become ruthless editors of their own work. Another thing I always recommend is to have critique partners. They're not always easy to find, because you need somebody that's pretty much on your level and who also understands that you're not asking them to pat you on the head and say, oh, how good. You need somebody to say, well, this could be better here, or I got bored or lost right here. So a critique partner is very helpful, but mostly it's learning to be your own critic, to the point, not that you drive yourself crazy, but that you realize that the next draft through will be better, and the next draft after that, and that you can really approach it as a learning curve that will be very steep the first year or two, but that never stops. It's difficult, and you have to be keen to do it.
What about when it comes to criticism? I mean, you hear a lot of times, because one of the things that I tell authors, because I read, you know, literally because of the different publications I write for, I read over 100 books a year.
Sure.
And I've made a promise to myself and to authors that I will not take it upon myself to try to slaughter anyone with words. My main thing has been, if I enjoyed the book, I'll contact the author, write a review, do all I can to promote it. If I didn't enjoy the book, I'll pass it on to someone else. And as far as writing anything, I don't go about writing and saying, you know, the book is horrible, don't buy it, don't waste your money. Because I realize that there are readers for everyone.
Yeah.
And not all authors will appeal to everyone. And I think what a lot of readers need to understand is that, especially if they're going to write reviews, like on Amazon, which is very important, that, you know, you might just not have found the right book for you. Maybe it wasn't that it wasn't a good book. Maybe it just wasn't the right book for you. And I think that's sometimes hard to differentiate. But I was going to ask you, how do you deal with the criticism? Because I know it's not always easy to take. And I'm just curious as to you, how do you deal with it, and how will you encourage others to deal with it when it comes to criticism?
If you're going to be putting something out in the public, you have to be prepared to not please everybody. The criticisms I got that stung were the ones that said, this is no romance. And I say, well, yeah, I know that. But you just don't respond to criticisms that are not positive. But I think you just have to expect it, and I think you're very wise in saying that a book that you do not respect has found a readership anyway, and
right.
Those readers deserve to be respected, even if you don't care for a particular work. But we all have to be thick-skinned and remember that you will not please everybody, and no way you can. So I think anybody who's in the public, and at the least bit, because I'm not a public personality walking down the street, but as an author, I am, and you have to just expect it and accept it and let it roll off.
Well, Gretchen, I have definitely enjoyed speaking with you. For those that are just joining us, we've been talking to for the half hour to best-selling author Gretchen Craig. She's the author of two books right now, Always and Forever and Ever, My Love. And, Gretchen, we definitely want you to come back to Conversations and tell us when the new work is getting ready to be released.
Thank you. I'd love to.
Well, look, for those that might want to find out more information about you online, you do have an online presence. Why don't you go ahead and give them your website?
Sure. It's easy. It's www.gretchencraig.com. And we've got a couple of things to add to the website. My husband does it for me. And the second book has won another award, and we'll put that up there. But there's a link where you can buy the books or write me an email, and I would love to hear from anybody who's listening.
Well, Gretchen, you'll definitely be hearing back from Conversations. It was great meeting you last year in person at the Walden Books in Jackson, Mississippi. And I look forward to getting the third book autographed when it's released and you're out on your tour.
Thank you so much, Cyrus.
All right, thank you. Have a great day, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye. And for our listeners, don't forget this is not in our program for today. We're going to transition just a bit. We've gone from talking with an author to someone who promotes authors. Now, we know that promotion, as Gretchen mentioned, is one of the most important things when it comes to authors, finding that readership, finding that base, and also letting people know about you and also about the book and what you've contributed to the literary community. One of the people who is definitely taking the lead in that is Dana Pittman. She is the person that's behind NEA Promotions. We're going to be speaking with her for the second half hour. We're going to take one quick break. When we come back from the break, we'll be joined live with Dana Pittman. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening to Conversations Live.
I got to put the cup down. Man, forget that. I'm going to bring the cup with you, dog. I'll be back.
I'll holler later.
Yes, sir. It's your boy, Ben. You already know, man. We back at it, Focus Radio. I got to take 1 second, you know what I'm saying? Just one quick second, just to let y'all know something, man. Your boy, C.A. Webb, hollered at me right quick, you know what I'm saying? He started a little hip-hop and books movement, you dig? I shouldn't even say little. It's real big. You got C. Murda, Babs from Making the Band. A lot of different artists, man. And they taking their time to try to make sure that the youth and our people in general don't forget to pick up a book. You know what I'm saying? So do as I do, man. When you got a little downtime, you know what I mean? Or even in your uptime, man. Pick up a book. You know what I'm saying? Expand your vocabulary. Expand your mind. Believe that. You heard it here. Your boy Bean, Focus Radio. Just focus!
Hip-hop and books.com. It's an empowered movement, you feel me? That was Florida rapper I-Beam encouraging you to take part in the Hip Hop and Books Literacy Campaign. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But joining us on the line right now, we have our second guest for the hour. Again, as I mentioned, she is one of the leading forces when it comes to promoting quality authors today. She is behind NEA Promotions. We're speaking with none other than Miss Dana Pittman. How you doing, Dana?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Great, great. And thanks for joining Conversations Live today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, look, we're glad to have you on the program. Dana, you are doing a lot of great things with NEA Promotions. We definitely want you to talk about that. Why don't you start off by telling our listeners a little bit about who Dana is and how you got started with NEA Promotions?
Well, I would love to. I always start off with personal. I mean, I'm a mother and a wife and of course, sister and all that good stuff. And my husband and I started a website development company almost 7 years ago. And while we were running that business, and it's still active today, I was charged with client relations and assisting with marketing and all that type of stuff. My husband handles the tech side, and he kind of just gave me. I had everything else, everything non-tech. And as time went on, we had a lot of clients that would, after they had their site designed, they didn't know what to do after that. And so I was doing a lot more marketing. And so it became more important as time went on, especially with the changes and people doing more online. And so early this year, we decided to start NEA Promotions. And the way that I got into with the books, quite honestly, I, you know, it's either that I kind of fell in it or it was just God having its way, because I've always been an avid reader. I heard you earlier saying that, you know, you normally read about 100 books a year, and I'm pretty much the same, maybe about, maybe more. I think so far for this year I'm at 70-something now.
Wow.
And so I've always been an avid reader. I'm by trade, I'm trained in the legal profession. And so I always had a business, been self-employed for a long time. And so I really take a lot of the things that I've learned from, you know, the training as far as going to school training and on-job training, and then putting it together with being an entrepreneur and just getting out there and being a people person. So it turned into us doing a lot of work with authors, just because of us doing near virtual book tours, which I started honestly for myself. I just wanted to find new authors that were not your quote-unquote heavy hitters, or, you know, not the people that you automatically, maybe that already have a readership, some that may be self-published or with small publishers. Because when I looked at my bookshelf, you could tell who my favorite authors were immediately. And I had some others sprinkled in there, but I had more reoccurring than new. And that's where Near Virtual Book Tours came from.
Dana, I want to ask you something, because this is something that we try to focus on here, because we not only have authors, like we just had Gretchen Craig on, who has been critically acclaimed. She's made best-selling list for the past couple of years. But would you agree that a lot of times the difference between an author, quote-unquote, making it or not making it is not who they're published by, but who does their promotions?
Well, I would say that it's probably a combination. And the reason why I say it's a combination, because I find a lot of people that they think of the promotions aspect of it as an afterthought, not a beforethought. And so, you know, they could easily say, okay, well, I'm published with this person, but not even with a big publisher. I mean, promotions is so huge when you have so many books that are put out every year. So I feel like it's a collaboration, but more than anything, it's up to that author to take charge and say, okay, this is what I want to happen. This is where I see myself, and who or what, you know, actions do I need to align myself with in order to make that happen. And so it's a collaboration, but it has to be with the author spearheading it all. You know, they have to be in charge of it, and they have to be in control of what they want to happen in their campaign and in their book's lifespan. You know, I mean, you know firsthand that with a self-published or a small-published book, that their lifespan is a lot longer than maybe someone that is published with a large publisher. And so that's something else that you have to consider, right? Because you can kind of, even though some different places maybe don't like bringing on older books, but it's new to somebody. Somebody hasn't
right.
read it before. And so it's just about putting that in your mind and kind of taking charge. And you have to go through a lot of no's to get a good yes. And that's all a part of it.
One of the guests that we're going to have on our program next week is actually a client of yours, T.L. James. She'll be on during our lunch hour, actually next Monday. And one of the things that I think is so fascinating, and in talking to authors that are published, even by traditional publishers, more so than self-published authors, because I think self-published authors know that the brunt of the marketing and promoting is theirs, unless they have a publicist, because it's the business is theirs. I think a lot of times, and I want to get your take on this, Dana, that a lot of times when authors are published by traditional publishers, they think, well, you know, they have someone to take care of marketing. I can just write the book, don't have to worry about anything else. And they don't see the success sometimes that even the self-published authors who take out the time to have a marketing strategy, like you mentioned. Do you think that that's the downfall sometimes? And I know you mentioned that a lot of times it's the afterthought for some people. But do you think that that critical aspect of taking personal responsibility for your work and getting it out there sometimes contributes to the success or failure?
Definitely. I think that's the pivotal point, because I think there's going to be very few people nowadays that can sell a book on name alone. I know because there are authors that I purchase their books before it come out. I don't read the synopsis. I don't look at the book cover. I just know on XYZ date this book is coming out and I buy it, okay? But that's not everybody, and that's with them having a strong following. But I've met some authors that, you know, someone else may assume that, hey, they can just kind of sit back and let that be enough, and they still are aggressive. And it's like, I know you work also with musicians. It's like you have to be hungry, and
right.
And it's in a sense of you call it whatever you want. You can call it being hungry. You can call it being a hustler. You can call it being very outgoing, being very forward moving. Any of those things, that means that you are grabbing the bull by his horns and you are saying, okay, this is what I want to happen in my campaign. And I don't think nowadays that there are a lot of people that can just rest on name alone. There are some, but there are not a lot. And so therefore, I think going out there and making sure that you have a plan and you work your plan, being okay with trying new things. I think also having the spirit and also the wherewithal to work with different people to see what works for you, because this person may be a heavy hitter and you don't work well together, or you don't see eye to eye as far as where you want to be, because at the end of it all, it's going to all fall on that author's shoulders, even if they work with someone else. And so I always say, you know, it's okay. If you don't want to work with me, that is totally fine with me, and it won't hurt my feelings. It won't, because it's your book, it's your baby, and it's your you're in charge of that if you want it to be a success or a failure. And when you have people around you that can help you, I think it's beneficial, but it's only beneficial if you work well together. Or
right.
If you can really come to, you know, terms, and you can sit down and say, you know, this is what I have in mind. These are some of the things that I'd like to weave in. This is my budget. This is where I see myself. You know, in 1 year, I'd really would like this to happen with my book. In 6 months, I'd like this. In 5 years, I'd like this with my career. And having someone that knows those things is helpful, because they can see it at least partly through your eyes to help you with developing what you have planned for your book and your project.
So then if an author comes to you then and they say, okay, I want to have NEA Promotions, the virtual book tour, I want to have this to help promote my book, what is the first thing you say to them after you have established, you know, what they're looking for as far as, you know, their budgetary plans and everything? What is the first thing you would tell them they need to do?
The first thing that I like to do is see what they're working with. You know, sometimes people get caught up in different accolades and all of that, and that doesn't always yield a good book. So I like to see what they're working with. And then I also let people know that NEA Virtual Book Tours is slightly different than other book tours, and I have to be so clear about explaining that. We are the tour. You know, we bring different people to our site so that the people that are on our mailing list and that come to our site can see different types and bodies of work from different genres, and that's why our different titles are so eclectic. It's because of that reason. So when we send people out to other places, it's really because those other places support NEA Virtual Book Tours. It's not that that's what we do. We don't go out. Like, there are some people, that's what they do. They want to put you in all these different places. That's wonderful. We do help get our people onto other places, but that's not. The first thing is getting them onto our site, exposing them to our listeners, and then trying to blossom them out from there. And that's why we can work with people that are on a limited budget, if that makes any sense. And so we want
right.
to bring them to us so that when people come, I mean, Cyrus, like I think in the past few months, if I tallied it up, we've had probably well over 100,000 hits on our sites. And we have a lot of people that come there, and it's because they can sit and click around. You're going to get something different every month. Like, you know, our sites that went up this morning or today when they change over. It's because we have different people than what we had last month. And we just focus on those people for this month, and that's it. And so we give them an opportunity for one, because a lot of them, it's the first time that they've done anything like this. They may be technology shy, or they may be not as accustomed to doing interviews. And they may or may not have someone like you that has read the book and want to sit down and talk about it. And so we kind of open them up to that. Then we do other things that are on the back end, like we do email blasts with several different companies. We do open them up to our different sites and our different networks that we're growing, and we love adding new people on, but we're doing that at a gradual pace because we, again, need to have people that, just like with that author, that are aligned with our vision, because people that like it love it. People that don't like it, well, I mean, we tried, right?
Right.
And so, you know, back to your question of, you know, getting people out there and what would I want them to do, I think the first thing is they have to have a vision in mind. That doesn't mean that I have to see a marketing plan, because people should do it, but they don't. But I think more than anything, I like to click with people, because we do a lot of work. And if we click well together, you're going to get so much more out of it. If you are an active person rather than a passive person, you're going to get so much more than what you could ever expected from our time together. Well, so that's what I look at first.
Okay. For those that are just joining us, you're listening to Conversations Live. Our guest for this half hour is Ms. Dana Pittman. She is the person behind NEA Promotions and the virtual book tour. Dana, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, I want you to be able to give out the website for people to go if they want to go ahead now and check out the virtual book tour to see what's there. We want you to give out that information and also tell us a little bit about some of the authors that you're working with, okay?
Okay, great.
Okay. But to take us into the break, we're going to listen to Tim Collins. This is his song, Tuxedo. When we come back from the song, we'll be joined live again with Ms. Dana Pittman.
Whoa. Whoa, whoa, yeah. The time has come for you and I to take that walk down the aisle. Find someone good to sing tuxedo by the ring. This is the day that we make our lives complete. The deep emotions we feel inside. I know that I'll never find a love like yours and mine, and endless love. There's never gonna be someone, 'cause God has made someone. So why am I waiting for someone to give me more than the moon and the stars, more than all that you are, my whole wide world. And I'll be dressed in white from head to toe. She said she couldn't say no, and all when she saw that ring, diamonds and everything. I said I'd never make her cry, but tears came from her eyes. Read her poem written by me. She said she wants the world to see. She loves me. Oh, oh, oh. Baby, I love you, honey, I love you.
My good friends Tim Collins and Dennis Spivey singing their original song, Tuxedo. You're listening to Conversations Live, where we connect you live with the artists and authors you love who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. And today, we're talking during this half hour with Ms. Dana Pittman, one of the people behind Neo Promotions and the virtual book tour. Now, Dana, before we went to break, I said that we wanted you to be able to give out the website for people if they wanted to go to find out more about the work that you're doing and to be able to take that virtual tour. So first of all, give them the site, and then we want to talk about what they'll find when they get there.
Okay. Well, I will point them first to our newsletter, which is at nianewsletter.com, and that's NIANewsletter.com. And that will show you the different things that we have going on at Nia Promotions. There you're going to find the authors that we're spotlighting on Nia Virtual Book Tours. You're also going to see the different events that we have planned. For example, this upcoming month we have a marketing seminar, a teleseminar that's going on with an industry professional where she's going to discuss writing a book marketing plan and what you should do and what you shouldn't do and things you should consider when it comes to your budget. We also have you coming on this month. We have a lot of things that go on, which focuses on not only authors, but we like having the educational aspect of it. So we do have interviews with industry professionals on Nia Promotions, everything from book marketing to publishers to book clubs, and I like having those things there too. So we're a place where authors as well as readers can dwell, you know, together and still find something there for each one of them. And so they can start at Nia Newsletter. They can visit us at niapromotions.com as well as niavirtualbooktours.com. But going to our newsletter will get you to all the other places, and we'd love to have anyone that would want to come through.
Okay, all right. So again, you would tell them to first go to nianewsletter.com, and then they can go to niapromotions.com,
mm-hmm.
and then you said the third site would be the
Nia virtual book tour.com
as well.
Tour.
Now, for you, I know you mentioned that it's not just for authors, but also for readers as well. what it's been, because I've heard nothing but great things, Dana, about the services that you offer from authors. So what has been, I guess, for you, one of the signs of success for the services that you offer to the public?
Wow, that's a heavy question. And before I answer that, I was going to say it's NIA Virtual Book Tours with a plural.
Okay, all right.
But I think more than anything, to your question, it's just gratitude. Sometimes there's, you know, we go out and we do things, and we know that when you pay for things, you know, you want a certain thing, you know, you want a certain result. But at the same time, there are times when you get more than what you bargain for. And there's people that I work with that I can tell you that I am ecstatic about what I do. I can't believe what I have the opportunity to do every day. The fact that I can work with such wonderful people and we are seeing such progress. And I just see better things coming in the future. So, you know, from my mouth to the Lord's ears, you know, I hope that it continues. And so I think more than anything, it's just holding those books in my hand, and when we're talking, I still get giddy. I'm such a nerd like that. I get giddy when I get books in the mail. I get giddy when I read a good book. I tell everybody. And so it's like I'm like a super reader or something.
Right,
if that's such a thing. But I think that's it, you know, having people that not only appreciate what I do but see value in it, the fact that I enjoy it so much, so even if they didn't, I have a wonderful time, and I don't want that to happen, of course, but I think just like when you were speaking with Gretchen earlier in the show, and she said it clearly, you know, some people like it, some people don't, but
right.
All you can do is treat people the way that you've been taught to treat people and continue to give of yourself in the way that you know how and let everything else take care of itself. And it does. So.
That's true. That is so true. And Dana, again, our hat is off to you. You're doing a great job. You're doing a great service, not only for authors but also for readers. Again, our guest for this half hour has been Dana Pittman. She is one of the people behind NIA Promotions and Virtual Book Tour. Again, as she mentioned to you, and for those who missed it, definitely to get an idea of what they have coming up, who they're working with, you can go to www.nianewsletter.com. That will get you started. And as she mentioned, that will get you to the other sites that will help you with NIA Promotions and also NIA Virtual Book Tours as well. So, Dana, again, thank you so much for your time and for talking with Conversations today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and I look forward to us connecting later this month as well.
Exactly. On the 18th, I think, we'll be together. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Well, yes, I know. We'll have you on the hot seat.
Okay. And for all of our listeners, thank you once again for listening to Conversations Live. As always, don't forget that there will be a podcast of this interview. If you happen to miss some of the interview with Gretchen Craig as well as with Dana Pittman, you'll be able to find the podcast by visiting our book club website at www.thebestbookclub.info. That's www.thebestbookclub.info. Look at the Conversations Live link, and you can click there, and you'll be able to hear the podcast from this. As well, if you're looking for information about the Hip Hop and Books Project, something that I encourage all recording artists to join, all you have to do is go to the same site, thebestbookclub.info, and click on the Hip Hop and Books site. Until next time, this is Cyrus Webb saying have a great day. As always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy a great book. Until next time, this is Cyrus Webb saying have a great one. We'll see you right back here with Conversations Live. Thank you, as always, for your support.
It's your boy Tim Steele, COD All-Star, and I want all my music lovers to join my addiction and get hooked on books. For more information, log on to www.hiphopandbooks.com. And for more information on your boy Steele, hit me up at myspace.com.